From Clearfield to Pittsburgh, Altoona to Erie, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Americans spend too much time yelling at each other and not enough time talking with each other. Conversations on the Culture aims to change that. Kim Kennedy of Conversations on the Culture is here with details. The Steelers and Pirates want more tax dollars for their stadiums. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report look into their sweetheart deal. And you won't find much bipartisan agreement in Washington, but it is there when it comes to helping veterans. Alan McCormack of Concerned Veterans for America has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Kim Kennedy from Conversations on the Culture in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The state Supreme Court has shot down part of the law that legalized sales of airborne fireworks in Pennsylvania. The court ruled provisions of the law that permitted the sale of such fireworks from roadside stands was unconstitutional because the General Assembly delegated safety standards to an outside group. Left intact is the legal sale of such fireworks from brick-and-mortar stores. Of course, the 12% additional sales tax will remain in effect. Medical marijuana may soon be available to patients suffering from additional medical conditions. The State Medical Marijuana Advisory Board has approved the process of expanding the list of 21 serious conditions which currently qualify for obtaining the drug. Additional qualifying conditions will be individually examined before that list is expanded. Governor Tom Wolf is once again taking action to gain more control over the state's congressional and legislative redistricting process. In the wake of what many consider to be an unconstitutional Supreme Court re-gerrymander of the state's congressional district lines earlier this year, the governor has created a 15-member redistricting reform commission to study what he termed the creation of fair maps. A look at members of the commission, however, finds it is populated by Democrats and various left-leaning groups. Republican leaders in the General Assembly were not consulted on the commission and say the governor has no authority to impanel such a group. The state's congressional and legislative districts must be redrawn following the 2020 census. Read about all things Pennsylvania at the all-new patownhall.com. The annual Pennsylvania Leadership Conference will be held in early April. It is the largest gathering of public policy conservatives each year here in the Keystone State. Information on the conference, by the way, is available at paleadershipconference.org. Leading up to the conference, we will have a series of interviews with the grassroots organizations that participate in the event. First up is Kim Kennedy, a facilitator with Conversations on the Culture. Kim, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Kim, your organization is called Conversations on the Culture. Why is it at this particular time you and others see the need for us to start having these conversations?
I guess, Loman, it grew out of a frustration of the last 3 years of spending time as a host, a co-host on a program that I work on called It's a New Day, which airs Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays from 7 to 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on WFYL 1180 Radio. We bring on some first-rate guests, including yourself, and we have had some marvelous conversations, great discussions. And then this little voice just started coming up in my heart and in my mind, like, is this all we're going to do is talk about these things? Is this all the point is to get people's emotions stirred and then just go about your merry business? I thought, you know, we need to take it to the next level. We need to learn what it means to do a Republican constitutional form of government. And I learned a lot from, I don't know if any of your listeners are familiar with Bill Federer with AmericanMinute.com. He's a frequent guest of ours. The man is amazing. And he started this idea with talking about how the founding father said that the people, the citizens, are the kings. What in the world does that mean? Well, we've been unpacking that and exploring that more. It's about time we learned more about our history and restore our government to the way that the founders wanted it to be.
As we look at results of the recent November elections, Kim, your station where you are and our co-host is based in southeastern Pennsylvania outside of Philadelphia. That, of course, was an area where Democrats made enormous gains, and not just Democrats, but socialist-leaning Democrats in the U.S. Congress, in the state Senate, in the state House. As you talk with people around Montgomery, Bucks, Chester, all throughout the suburban areas around Philadelphia, even into Reading and Berks County, what is it that you're hearing that's causing people from a formerly heavily Republican bastion, really, to turn so much to the Democrat side when, and as we talk about some of these issues that we're going to talk about, the cultural issues, really Democrats don't square with their views on those issues?
May I be perfectly blunt in saying, first and foremost, that if you repeat a lie often enough, it becomes truth, even when it's not truth. And there are too many people, especially those of the younger generation, that have been told a lie about socialism. And they have not studied the history of China, of Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union, of East Germany, of Cambodia, Vietnam, and they need to. You just look at Venezuela right now, and you start scratching the surface of that and looking into that. Socialism, when tried, always fails without exception. It never works. It never has worked. People die. People starve to death. Why do we believe this? Well, someone brought to my attention recently, Bill Ayers, who was one of the main strategists who helped Barack Obama achieve what he did. He and his group, the Weathermen, realized that bombing buildings and doing shock things like that wasn't having the effect on the culture that they wanted it to. So they instead targeted university professors, and, well, look at the results. We have a generation of young people who believe extreme views that completely contradict what our constitutional republic is. They are not for liberty. They might think they are, but they don't understand it. And I also was raised in a generation where I was taught social studies. I wasn't taught civics. I wasn't taught history. So I've learned a lot from these folks who are traditionalists and study the writings of the founders. And I've become educated and learned why this is so much more a better way to go than socialism. For most people, that is absent. And what concerns me is when I have a poll watcher in Northern Montgomery County telling me that Republicans are scorning this person, saying, we don't have a problem with socialism in this country. What's wrong with you saying these kinds of things? I'm not sure what to do with that. Is that genuine ignorance? Is that denial? Is that a closet socialist? I don't know. But it just comes back to, Lohman, that we have our work cut out for that. And if you look at our website, which is cotcus.com, you'll see at the top of the page, we're about informing, we're about talking, we're about educating. We are about getting people mobilized and equipping them to do, which we consider to be the greatest deterrent against tyranny. Some people truly believe in their hearts that it could never happen here. I would say, based on the evidence, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, that is so. We saw some people win in southeastern Pennsylvania. First of all, what bothers me is they appeal to people's emotions. They don't put a message out. So I'm concerned when people are voting for people just because it feels good or I like the way they look. You don't have debates anymore. You don't have exchange of ideas. That ought not to be. And I'm hoping that by having these conversations, people will wake up and say, you know what, we need the facts. We need to know where people stand. We need to vote with knowledge.
I think you've really hit a nail on the head there, Kim. I know one of the reasons why I personally think that those who are pro-growth, who are pro-free enterprise and pro-liberty have such difficulty in getting voter support is that the left is very good about distilling their message down to a sentence or two or even a word or two and putting a lot of emotion behind it, whereas we tend to try to argue the intellectual side, and that usually just doesn't transfer very well into a 30-second spot. So I can see why you're wanting to have conversations on this. We are talking with Kim Kennedy about conversations on the culture. And Kim, in terms of the fact that we're seeing that the traditional education establishment not only has failed, but
actually indoctrinated an entire generation of voters. And I would point out, Kim, that if you look at a lot of the results of the election, it would appear that college educated, the more educated you are, the more likely you are to support democratic socialism, which tells me the indoctrination that you referenced a couple of minutes ago is actually working and now showing itself in the electorate. So what sort of projects are you and Conversations on the Culture able to undertake to start putting the pro-growth, pro-liberty side out there?
The model is very easy and very simple, and it's designed to really target all kinds of people who have a sincere desire to learn. I'm not talking about the paid bots who go around and bomb Twitter and others with their filthy speech. You know what I'm talking about, Loman. You've seen it on President Trump's his media and just some of the horrible, gross things that are said. I'm talking about people who genuinely want to have a conversation. We do live events, but a lot of our work is done through webcasts on Zoom. And you can become a member. It's $25 a year. The reason why we charge is we are pure grassroots. I call ourselves pure resistance. This is citizens talking to citizens. We don't have George Soros money behind us. We're trying to get a bunch of citizens to come together, join us on these Zoom casts, and it's real easy to do. You just click on the link and boom, you're in the discussion room. We had a great conversation last Wednesday with some constitutionalists. We had a great exchange of ideas. People who are getting excited about learning and sharing information. And some of these people are so busy, they only have 1 hour a month to spare to do something like that. But what if you had 10,000 citizens in Pennsylvania alone who had 1 hour a month dedicated to educating someone else? That's 10,000 hours, Loman. I think you could be very impactful right in your own community.
Kim, in order for people to successfully argue the evils of socialism and to talk about the way that pro-growth economics really does empower people from all walks of life and all economic strata, they do have to be educated. So tell our audience how they can get involved in some of these conversations that you just referenced.
Well, you can go to the website, cotcus.com, and read up about us. You can join, become a member. We price it so that it's affordable for everybody. Students, we're dropping the price to $10. We just ask you to provide proof of what school you're at, and because we really want to have conversations with the younger generation. And we will tell you about the discussion rooms that we have going on and how you can become a part of them. This is a new organization, so we're in the process of building. So somebody out there might say, I'd like to have a discussion room. Well, tell me about it. Let's have that conversation and see how we can get people talking in meaningful discussions, conversations, and helping to get truth and facts out there, because I think we are both in agreement that there is a serious lack of it in the media today, and it has resulted in a distrust of what we hear and a lot of confusion as well. But there are reliable sources like the Heritage Foundation, we go to quite a bit, and others that really try fact find and get truth out there.
Again, we have been talking with Kim Kennedy. Kim is not only host of A New Day, it's A New Day on WFYL AM in suburban Philadelphia, but she is one of the facilitators of a new group, Conversations on the Culture. Kim, once again, give us the website where folks can go if they would like to join in that conversation.
Yes, please go to cotcus.com. You can reach out to us at info@cotcus.com. I urge you to check out WFYL at 1180WFYL.com. You'll hear some great original programming there, and both complement one another and are trying to do the work of keeping the light of liberty shining to the next generation.
Kim Kennedy from Conversations on the Culture. Kim, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Loman.
The Steelers and Pirates want more taxpayer dollars for Heinz Field and PNC Park. With a look at details of that request and the ways those franchises already benefit from taxpayer largesse, we turn to Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi of the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy. Eric?
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. Right now, we're full swing into the Steelers and Penguins seasons, respectively on the turf and the ice. And lest we think
sometimes
that this
are the same thing.
Sometimes the same.
This time of year
could be frozen over. Lest we say that this is a sports talk show, which it's not. Both of these teams have kind of been involved in a public policy issue, which then falls into our respective arena, to speak. Why don't you give our listeners a background on what's been going on with the two teams? It's part of a broader issue related to the sales tax, the facilities that they play in. Give our listeners an idea of what's been going on recently.
Absolutely. For those not familiar with Allegheny County, we have an add-on 1% sales tax that goes to what's called the Regional Asset District. The Regional Asset District, of course, was designed back in the 90s to do things like parks, zoos, roads. The municipalities got some money out of that as a way of helping to share the burden of the city of Pittsburgh having to host all of these cultural amenities. And so it was not designed for funding sports stadiums. But in the late 90s, of course, the Steelers and the Pirates wanted new stadiums, and they were asking for some help. And, of course, they went to vote a referendum. The voters turned them down to add on yet another sales tax over the course of 11 counties. So they looked back to Allegheny County's 1% as add-on tax and said, hey, wait a minute. We can fund the stadiums using that. So they get about $13 million to pay off the bonds for the stadiums for the Pirates and the Steelers. Well, fast forward to 2018. Now, the Penguins at the time had their own facility, and they said, no, we're good. But they did take some money to rehabilitate the old Civic Arena. And then, of course, a couple years later, the Penguins get their own facility through gaming money. It's now called the PPG Paints Arena. And the bond that was used to fund the renovations on the Civic Arena has been paid off. So it freed up, if you want to use the word freed up, about $1.16 million annually from the RAD fund. Well, the Steelers, the Penguins, the Pirates, and then they threw the convention center in there, eyed that up and said, hey, wait a minute. Instead of, you know, since it was being used to fund the Penguins facility, and of course that bond has been retired, we could use that. Why don't you split it between the four of us? And of course that catches our attention because we said, well, wait a minute. You get plenty of money from the Regional Asset District tax. You don't need that. And the Steelers responded in the newspapers by saying, well, the Sports and Exhibition Authority actually owns the stadiums and is their responsibility to rehabilitate and update and keep them in good working condition. It's what any good landlord would do. And of course, that got us thinking, well, what kind of lease, what kind of tenant are these teams? And so I took a few minutes to go through the lease of the Steelers and see what kind of agreement they actually have with their landlord, the Sports and Exhibition Authority.
So basically then, what you're saying here is that the teams are going back to the well, so to speak, right? This this money that's managed by the Regional Asset District Board and are asking, or did ask, for the money that was freed up. What would they want to be using this for? You're saying they already get $13.4 billion to pay off the bond that was used to construct at least the baseball and the football stadium. What would they want this $1.16 million to do?
Well, capital repairs, of course. Now, if you just do very simple math and divide that by four, you know, it's as I can't do the simple math, about $300 million or so each for capital repairs, because the face of the facilities are getting a little older. I mean, they were both opened, the Pirate Stadium in 2000, Heinz Field 2001, thereabouts, and the Penguins, their facility, I think, opened in 2010. So, yeah, they're saying they're getting old, we want this money. And, of course, it's not just a one-time allocation. Like a lot of things in government, once it happens once, it never ends. It just keeps going and going and going. I mean, heck, we can talk about the beer tax from the Johnstown flood if you want to get onto things that never go away, even though they should. And so, you know, again, I looked at what kind of tenant the Steelers really are. And you look at that lease, and the lease for the Steelers, and to some degree the Pirates, is very heavily favored for the teams. For example, they borrowed $75 million from some kind of state grant. And there was put into the lease that the team was responsible, the Steelers were responsible for $325 million payments every 10 years. So the first payment was to take place around 2011, 2012. So I went back and I looked through the Sports and Exhibition Authority's paperwork, their financial reports, and found no evidence of a payment. Well, if you dig further into the lease, it says, but you don't have to pay anything if you can take these credits toward any tax that you may have paid towards a Commonwealth. Now, that's income tax, corporate net income tax, capital stock franchise tax, sales tax, liquor tax. I'm sure the Johnstown flood tax is probably part of it as well. Any tax that they paid that went to the state, they got a credit. Now, multiply those taxes by a multiplier of 7.5. And again, where 7.5 came from, I haven't got the foggiest idea. Somebody slid it in there. And this was a legislative thing that they had done back in 1999. You average these over the 3 years, multiply by 7.5, and that'll give you your credit. Well, needless to say, they earned enough credits that they don't have to pay the first $25 million payment. With the Freedom of Information Act, I got that information from the Sports and Exhibition Authority. And of course, the other part of the law says, well, if you have anything more, let's say you've got $26 million in credits, that extra $1 million will carry over to the next payment. And the next payment, the multiplier goes up to 10 from 7.5 again. Haven't got a clue where those numbers came from, those multiplier numbers. But long story short, it was set up so the team really didn't have to pay anything. And you dig even further, and you see that, well, they also have the development rights between the two stadiums. The Steelers and the Pirates went in on a development company. Now, they hired a real estate company to actually do the developing and whatnot, but they get the royalties. They also get royalties from parking. You know, they rent the spaces around the stadium for like $40,000 a year, and they make all the money on parking, which is like $25 a space. The lease between the Steelers and the Sports and Exhibition Authority is heavily weighted against the taxpayers. The Steelers really are not paying back anything. They're living there practically rent-free. The Sports and Exhibition Authority, which owns it, gets a tiny surcharge on tickets that helps them pay for capital repairs. And so there's only a little bit. There's maybe $6 or $4 million in there any given time, depending on the report that you look at. And they have used it for painting and carpeting and that kind of stuff, you know, keep the place looking nice and new. And of course, you get to the Pirates, and they have a very similar situation. They pay a small $100,000 a year rent, and they give a little bit of concession money. But for the most part, you have two teams that have benefited greatly at the expense of the taxpayer. We built them a new facility. We gave them all the opportunities to earn money. It's enriched their franchises a great deal. The value of the Steelers has gone up tremendously since that stadium has been erected, and I'm sure same for the Pirates. And so we said that they really, the Regional Asset District Board should deny the request of giving them this extra money. Well, of course, they didn't listen to us. And as of the vote, at the end of November, it has been brought down from $1.16 million to $800,000. So it's roughly $200,000 each. But that's going to be in perpetuity. That's going to keep going on. And so these teams are still going to enrich themselves at the expense of the taxpayer.
Frank, what a tale. That's quite interesting. And, of course, our listeners can always visit our website, which is www.alleghenyinstitute.org, to read that brief, to look at the archives on our website on this topic, which we've written a lot about over the years. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Republicans and Democrats in Washington, D.C. rarely come together on an issue, but they do join forces in helping the nation's veterans. Alan McCormick of Concerned Veterans for America has this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
The mission of Concerned Veterans for America is to advocate for policies that will preserve the freedom and prosperity that we and our families so proudly fought for and sacrificed to defend. You can learn more about Concerned Veterans for America at www.cv4a.org. That's the letter C, the letter V, the number 4, and the letter A.org. Our mission is the perspective one must use when looking at the work done by Concerned Veterans for America at the national level, as well as our efforts at the state level and across the 50 states where we have volunteers. We seek like-minded veterans and other individuals to support our efforts to further our mission in a cooperative and bipartisan manner. Bipartisanship in Washington are rare, except when it comes to reform at the Department of Veterans Affairs. Veterans didn't have either an R or a D after their names when they put on the uniform and swore an oath to defend our nation. They came from diverse backgrounds. They had different beliefs. But they served on behalf of all Americans, and they all deserve to be properly cared for. Bipartisanship has been a motivating principle behind the Veterans Administration reform efforts over the past several years, and it should continue to drive the agenda when the 116th Congress convenes in January. The new Congress has a good foundation to build upon. In response to the waitlist scandal, the first uncovered at the Phoenix Veterans Administration Hospital in 2014, Congress that same year passed the first ever major piece of bipartisan veterans legislation, the VA Choice Act. It is painful to recall, but veterans literally died waiting for care. Appalled lawmakers set about to make it easier for veterans to more swiftly access quality care in their communities. Although the execution of the Choice Act was far from perfect, unacceptably long wait times and budget issues persisted, the spirit of cooperation and bipartisanship was there, and that's a recipe for success. In the past 2 years, other widely supported measures have improved transparency and responsibility at the department. The VA Accountability and Whistleblower Protection Act made it easier to fire bad VA employees who will no longer get to keep their bonuses or to continue getting paid while appealing terminations, and it will afford greater protections to the many good employees to speak out when they see illegal, negligent, or dangerous practices. In June, President Donald Trump signed into law the Mission Act, which corrects the many of the Choice Act's flaws by consolidating the VA's community care programs and mandating clear standards for veterans wanting to access care outside of the VA system, and launching a much-needed review of the department's infrastructure. 38 separate veteran service organizations joined with Concerned Veterans for America in endorsing the bill, and it enjoyed broad bipartisan support in the House and Senate. But it has yet to be fully implemented, and Congress must remain vigilant to ensure that these reforms are properly executed. A transition of power from one party to the other on Capitol Hill shouldn't stand in the way of the momentum that we have built. Concerned Veterans for America will continue working with anyone who wants to improve the lives of our nation's veterans. And it's heartening to see that lawmakers appear to be willing to do the same. As the new Congress approaches, we look forward to working with Senators Pat Toomey and Bob Casey and Pennsylvania's delegation to the U.S. House of Representatives to truly transform the Department of Veterans Affairs to meet the needs of today's veterans. For Concerned Veterans for America, I'm Alan McCormick.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WWSM-AM in Lebanon, WJSM-AM in Martinsburg, along with WJUN-AM in Mexico, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program, those of the guests, and not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.